This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
I'm Rosie.
And I'm Ryan.
And we make the Voice of the Victim podcast.
We share stories about horrible things that happen to real people, and we try our best to tell it from the perspective of the victims and the survivors.
We also try to spread awareness of abuse that could be taking place around any of us, and talk about ways we can stay alert to help prevent it.
We want to be encouraging to survivors and help other empathetic people to appreciate the value of awareness.
Find Voice of the Victim podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts.
And remember, if you see something, say something.
It broadcasts at 1:38 a.m. from the very center of hell. Oktoberpod. Finally, a retro horror show which offers to bold individualists a look into the maddening space between nightmare and nostalgia. True horror stories and found footage beyond anything you've tested. Oktoberpod. Offered by OktoberpodVHS.com in black and white and color. Caution. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only on YouTube. Only on YouTube. Only on YouTube. Only on YouTube.
Stream as much as you can.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good.
We're bracing
for another winter storm here in Missouri.
We're supposed to be enveloped by snow.
We are supposed to be enveloped by snow. Anyway, do we have any little shout outs, anything we want to say real quick before we get started?
We want to say a huge shout out to everyone, first of all, because we love you all.
And you know who you are.
And if you don't, it's you.
It's not everybody else. It's just you.
And also, we want to a big hidey-ho to Steve
hidey-ho.
Burgess from across the pond. He gave us a nice little shout-out.
He did. It was very sweet.
Very nice.
Thank you.
He compared us to Mel and Sue from the Bake Off show. The Greatest Bake Off. What's it called?
The Great Bake Off. Is
the
that
Great
right?
Bake? I don't know.
I can't
Something
remember
like
either.
That. But it actually kind of fits us, I think.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Fun.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to
I wanted to say
thank you, Allie Kay, for checking us out and us keeping you company as you have been taking care of your sick daddy.
Aww.
And
sorry to hear you sick.
Yeah, he's talk about good genes. He's up there in years.
Oh, and Steve Burgess, by the way, he does a brand new true crime podcast called True Crime Fix.
True Crime Fix.
True Crime Fix. It's really good. I really like it. It's rare that anybody is as good as us. No. No, it's really good. I really like him. He's got a very sweet voice and
cool accent.
Great accent.
You know me and my accent.
And it's a great voice. It's perfect, but it's not so calming that it puts you to sleep, but it's very calming. And it, what else did I want to say? Oh, his cadence. That's the word I want. His cadence is really lovely.
Yes.
And it's just perfect. I love it. It's like one of my new favorite podcasts. Honestly, truly, ain't lying. It's good.
And that's true. You wouldn't say that if you didn't mean it.
Mm-mm. It's good.
So you want to get started on today's show?
Yeah. And also real quick, did you like Oktoberpod's new promo that we ran?
Oh, of course.
It's a takeoff from Last House on the Left, I believe. The original Last House on the Left trailer.
Before we get into this show, I just wanted to kind of say, please forgive me for my pronoun usage. The story deals with a trans man, but he kind of goes back and forth. So most of the research that I found, he went by he, like that's how they described him, until later on when he had surgery.
Right.
So that's how I'm going to follow that.
Right.
Okay. I just didn't want everybody to get confused with him, her, you know what I mean?
Right.
And bouncing back and forth.
Well, and you also have to realize too that we're old, especially Camille or Cam, whatever she's going to go
okay.
by today.
It's okay.
We're old and this whole pronoun thing is kind of like new to us and we're trying really hard to get it. But, you know, the old dog, new tricks kind of thing. So if we screw up, we are really sorry.
Yeah.
We don't mean any offense at all.
Right.
We love everybody. It's your life. You do what you do you.
Boo boo.
Boo boo.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
Sock
You're
going to
like this because we got some music, a little music in here.
I got the music in me.
I'm glad you say that.
I got
ready?
The music in
here
me.
Here we go. Whoop.
I got the music in me. Yeah.
So the year was 1980. Disco was alive and shaking under the silver globe.
Wow.
The glitter was strong. Iridescent eyeshadow ruled and everyone wore a wrap dress with a cute wedge.
Don't forget.
Do you remember those days?
Don't forget the little spooner on your neck for your little nose candy.
Little nose candy.
Little booger sugar.
Oh, boy. Blondie had a heart of glass. Donna Summer was being a bad girl. Bad girl. I love that song.
Talking about bad girl. Okay.
And the queen who reigned them all was none other than Miss Diana Ross.
Last dance. Last chance for love.
I'm coming up.
Yes, it's my last chance.
I'm coming up. That's Diana Ross.
A romance.
Okay. If you were cool enough, there was only one place to see and to be seen. You know where that is, right?
Studio 54.
That's right. Studio 54.
Isn't that where supposedly somebody threw cocaine all over the floor and Paris Hilton's mom and dad got on the floor and was starting to sniff it up?
Oh, I'm sure. It is crazy.
They're classy.
So there was Andy Warhol, Bianca Jagger, Liza Minnelli, Cher, Brooke Shields, but the velvet ropes were ruled by an iron fist and you had to make the cut to make it inside.
You had to be beautiful.
In fact,
we would have been the first ones
little
in.
Side note. Mm-hmm. There was one party crasher who actually died trying to get in. He climbed in next door through a vent and he died. He died trying to get in. Can you believe that? We'd
Takes
never
that
make
whole,
it.
Gonna do it or die trying, man.
Would we get in there today? I don't
then
know.
We would. Fuck yeah. They
we'd
can't
probably
see
just make
yeah,
friends
we would.
With somebody.
We would so get. Did you see our red carpet pick? Of course we'd get in there.
Oh, yeah. You're right. You're right. You're right.
We got into Oscars. We can do that.
That's right. Times were different then. Coke and Quaaludes were everywhere. Quaaludes, can you believe that?
Ludes.
Ludes. AIDS had not yet ravaged the scene.
Oh, God.
Clubs blasting disco music welcomed the young gay men and women who were looking for a place to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
With all the pretty people, mind you.
Of course.
So while Studio 54 ruled the Manhattan scene, just north of the city was Westchester County, where the downtown area hosted discos such as... And you gotta look these
names. Was
that
Studio 53?
The Playroom and Zippers with a Z at the end. You know,
of
that's
course.
A gay bar. Those clubs were just the place where the young suburban gay kids could go to be themselves and find other people to hang with, have fun, and get down.
Right.
Right?
Get down.
Ow!
Get down. Get down.
One of the partygoers was a 21-year-old gay man named John Delia. Delia loved the scene and he felt right at home in the gay club scene in Westchester. Delia grew up in Riverdale, which is a Bronx suburb just north of Manhattan. Now, as a child, he was a natural performer who loved the stage and being in front of people. He was cute. He was
right.
cute. Even as a child, Delia loved to dress up and perform for people. And thankfully, his mom encouraged it. She often liked helped him pick out outfits and things like that.
Oh, that fun.
How cute
fun,
is that,
yeah.
right? So as a young man, it was only natural that he would take to the stage and do what he loved. He loved the attention, of course.
Of course.
By, By 1978, Delia started performing at Zippers with a Z, and the audience couldn't get enough. Now, he was doing drag, of course.
And for those that don't know, it's men that perform
as women. Over the top, like makeup and hair and all that good stuff.
If you've never been to a drag show, totally go to a drag show. They are so much fun. All right, go ahead.
His main character that he would perform was a woman whom he idolized, Miss Diana Ross. Second time we heard that, right? His movements were perfect, and his fully sequined costumes dazzle. He was born to perform in front of people, and he loved that adoration. But in private, he was starting to question things. Things like, was he supposed to be a man or a woman? Soon, John Delia started taking hormones, female hormones. The hormones started to change his body so that he would become more feminine. Delia started to develop breasts, but he wanted more. He decided it was time to go under the knife to change his appearance, and there was only one person whom he thought would be perfect, and he knew exactly who he wanted to look like, and that was his idol, Diana Ross.
I'm coming out.
That's what I sang earlier.
I got a lot to.
Delia had a nose job, Adam's apple shaved, and a few more procedures. Delia was becoming more confident in appearance and attitude, and it showed. John Delia meets an ex-Navy recruit named Bobby Ferrara, who started working as a bartender at Zippers. Now, the two opposites were immediately attracted to each other. Delia with his over-the-top outgoing personality and Ferrara with his quiet manliness. It wasn't long before Delia fell very hard for Ferrara. It was all that Delia could think about, talk about, and it was noticed by all the friends. In fact, Delia said Ferrara was the love of his life and he would marry him someday. Although their love was strong and real, just like everything else, their storybook romance would soon encounter a bump. The Navy military police showed up one day. Seems that Ferrara went AWOL, absence without leave, from the Navy. They scooped him up and took him away and put him in prison in California. Devastated, Delia was bound and determined to wait for Ferrara.
All the way across country, too, so she couldn't go see him.
Exactly.
Or he. I don't pronounce.
I got you. It's hard. I know. So he continued on with his life, performing and hanging out at all his favorite places with his favorite friends. It was at one of these outings that Delia would meet the person who would change everything. It's December 1979 when a 22-year-old woman named Robin Arnold pulls up outside the Zippers nightclub in a Cadillac as Delia was sitting outside. As she exited the car, Delia made a comment to Arnold. Must be nice driving around in Daddy's car. She immediately shot back. It's all mine, honey. He loved that. And the two of them automatically become fast friends. So Robin Arnold, now this is talk about different sides of the world. Robin Arnold was a beautiful and charming and had an attitude to go with her heritage. See, she was born from a wealthy family out of New York City and was not only beautiful, but smart. She had actually went to college and earned a nursing degree.
Wow.
Much like Ferrara, Arnold was opposite of Delia, personality-wise. Delia was edgy and fun with his drag performances and groups of interesting friends. You know what I mean? Like interesting people to hang out with.
And the avant-garde.
Avant-garde.
The bourgeois.
Yeah. Robin Arnold saw Delia as someone she never knew growing up in her privileged, rich New York life. And she worked hard to get into his inner circle and become friends with all of them.
She worked hard for the money. So hard for it, honey.
Not long after the two of them became friends, they hit it off. Arnold was always hanging out with him, but apparently
she became his fruit fly.
But Arnold did not quite get the memo or thought that maybe she could change him because she developed feelings for Delia. Surprisingly, and much to not only his friends' utter shock, but to everyone, Delia, for the first time in his life, is digging on a woman. Dun, dun, dun. He was a bit smitten, maybe infatuated, whatever you want to call it, but it was new and different, and they both kind of liked it. So Ferrara was away in prison, and he's kind of liking on a girl.
Well, the cat's away. The mice play.
It's true.
So maybe he was bisexual?
Maybe.
Or maybe it was just exciting and new.
Step aboard.
We're expecting you.
The lap boat. So the two quickly became an item, and they're hanging out nonstop, often staying the night with each other at each other's places and things
staying
like that.
Staying the night. Stay in the night.
Now, while his friends were still dealing with Delia and his new love interest, it was not the only shock that Delia would present to his friends. Delia gathered all his friends and told them that he no longer wanted to be a woman after all.
Okay, so I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Did Arnold not realize he had breasts?
Delia stopped taking the hormone injections. His friends are left wondering if Delia is lonely since Farrar's in prison and doesn't want to be alone and so is hanging out with Robin, or if Delia was just confused because he's young.
Right, but you said that Arnold did not know about...
No, she knew. She knew. He was a drag performer. How could you not know?
Well, there are some straight men, not a lot, but there are some straight men that do
drag. No, we know. And there's also some straight men that have breasts, slightly. So,
but aren't taking hormones.
No. Okay.
Okay.
Well, see, so that's why he quits taking them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just confused.
I got you. As 1980 kicks off, the friends are wondering and worrying about, you know, about this whole situation. Delia and Arnold were getting serious as they dated, and Arnold rented a condo in Riverdale for them both to share. So they're going to move in together.
Right.
So there was even talk about the two of them getting married. While John Delia was no longer becoming a woman, he was still pursuing his career as a drag performer. Uh-huh. Arnold was very supportive of his profession and would often buy him these gorgeous sequined over-the-top outfits, wigs, and jewelry to perform with. Mm-hmm. Remember, she came from a pretty...
I'd like her, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He loved performing. People loved him. He was magnetic. He was energetic. People flocked to be around him and near him.
He was really magnetic? Like you could stick spoons and stuff on him?
Yep. It was amazing. The mic kept sticking to him.
You mean he had a magnetic personality?
He was magnetic and energetic, is what I wrote, Jen.
I know, but...
People flocked to be near him. He was the center of attention. And when Arnold was with him, you see where this is going, she too would be in that center. And she enjoyed that. As the couple were enjoying their lives and all the fun and all that stuff was going on, they got engaged.
Oh, good.
But things were about to change right after their engagement. Bobby Ferrara, you know, Delia's former love, was being released from military prison, and he was going to return to Westchester. Ferrara arrived on the scene, and Delia soon realized that the love they shared was burning stronger than ever. What's going to happen? What's Delia going to do? Continue on with the engagement to Robin Arnold, or go back to Bobby, whose love has never faded as he was serving time? These are the days of our lives. Next. No. Sorry. John Delia had to go with his heart, and his heart belonged to Bobby. Delia sat Robin down and told her that he still loved Bobby and that he would be going back to him. Arnold was pushed to the sidelines, and she had become used to being the center of attention with him and getting all that cool stuff that came with being getting all that attention from Delia. So obviously it was a huge shock to her. Now, Robin thought maybe she could change John.
Of course she did.
But it soon became obvious that that's never going to happen. Arnold.
You can never change a man. No, not even sexuality.
Nothing.
You can't even get them to change their socks half the time. So come on.
Right.
No offense to men. I'm just saying you can't change a man. You can't change a woman. You can't change anybody.
It's hard to change people.
It is. Get over it.
They have to change them.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless they want you to change their diaper, then that's a wholly different story. And I'm not even going to.
That's disgusting.
Don't even. It's no judgment.
It's a thing.
No judgment.
No judgment. I'm not.
But even though you said it was disgusting.
It is gross. I did it with the kids. I'm not doing it with the adult. So Robin Arnold must now come up with plan B. Arnold realized that she didn't want to be out of John Delia's life altogether. So she set herself up to be in their relationship. Yes, you heard that correctly, in their relationship. So she would now become best friends with not only Delia, but with Bobby as well. The three of them, they're BFFs, okay? As strange as it sounds and seems, Arnold and Delia were now just friends. They quit having a relationship. They're just friends. And Delia remained living in the condo that Arnold had leased for them as a couple. So John Delia moved into the condo that Robin Arnold had leased for the two of them. And here comes Ferrara, and he's going to start staying there as well. So it seems a little complicated. It's about to get more complicated.
It also doesn't seem like a good idea. John should have probably moved out. That would have been nice.
Nope. When Bobby Ferrara returned from prison, a few things about him had changed, which is often the case. These changes would, of course, put a strain on the relationship that John Delia and Bobby Ferrara once had. So Bobby informed John Delia that he felt he wasn't totally gay and he wanted to be with a woman.
Bobby's now having...
Bobby wants to be with a woman.
Okay.
Not become one, but be with one sexually.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Immediately, John Delia starts thinking about how he is going to try to lure Bobby back. And so, of course, now he starts thinking once again that he wants to go back and try to be a woman.
No. This is a mess.
Yeah. No, now you know about the pronouns and how I had to kind of keep that straight. Just wait. It gets worse. Okay. And his idea was that he would squash Bobby's need to be with a woman, right? And what would that do? Woman. Bobby would therefore be more attracted to John Delia.
Okay. And you can't change for a person either. Just FYI.
John Delia starts taking his hormone injections again, but he wanted the change to go faster because he was getting a little worried about Bobby losing interest. So Delia begins researching gender transition surgery. Now, remember, this is 1980 and the procedures are still relatively new, not as common as they are today. And that's a scary thing to be thinking about that, you know?
And it's so complicated.
It is complicated. And to be doing it because basically he didn't want to lose the love of his life. In 1951, a trailblazer set the path for gender reassignment surgery, and her name was Christine Jorgensen. Christine was born George William Jorgensen on May 30th, 1926, in the Bronx, New York. Born as the son of a carpenter, Jorgensen grew up feeling like she was stuck in a man's body. She hated boy clothes and loved her sister's pretty dresses. In her teen years, she said she was more envious of girls than interested in them, which I thought was kind of telling,
I think.
That's
heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking.
It really is. In 1945, the draft came a-calling, and she was soon in the military, as George, obviously. Mm-hmm. Her petite frame landed her as a clerk at Fort Dix. She was discharged in 1946. So it was shortly after this that Jorgensen realized she was going to become a woman. In 1950, Jorgensen traveled to Denmark to begin the transformation from man to woman. At this time, the only place that performed such procedures was in Europe. Treatments consisted of hormone therapy and surgery. While still recovering in the hospital, obviously, she became huge news in the United States. Mm-hmm. There were such headlines. This is terrible.
Being gay was still illegal back then.
There was headlines in the newspapers over here as Bronx boy is now a girl and dear mom and dad, son wrote, have now become your daughter. These are headlines of newspapers.
It's horrible.
When she returned home, publicity was out of control. She was hounded all the time by the press, which you can imagine. She finally agreed to do a sit-down interview and told American Weekly her story. Eventually, Jorgensen would become more comfortable with her fame. She developed a nightclub act saying, if you want to see me, you're going to have to pay for it.
Nice.
Smart, right? Jorgensen retired to Southern California in the early 70s and died of bladder and lung cancer in 1989. Her story and legacy paved the way. Gender issues, gender discussions, gender identity. So if you think about this, like in the scope of things, 1951 was not all that long ago, right?
Not at all.
So it's pretty crazy.
If we could do math, we would probably tell you that was about 70 years ago. Yeah. No, 60?
60. I don't know. No, 70. That's
70.
Fine. 70.
Yeah.
50, 60. Yeah, because it's almost 2020.
Boy, we're good.
We are good. So let's go back to John Delia. John Delia is now dead set. He is going to become a woman. 1980, again. Mm-hmm. So this is only 30 years after. The surgery is still relatively new.
Right.
30 years from when Christine Jorgensen did that. It's very expensive.
Yes.
So knowing what we know about this story, who's going to step in and offer to pay for the surgery? Robin Arnold. You're correct. Arnold decides that she'll help pay for John Delia's transformation, which is never a good idea.
No.
That's a you're going to owe me for life kind of thing, you know?
I own you now.
Yeah, exactly. In November of 1980, Delia returns home to heal and become used to the change. John Delia is now officially a she. And who does Delia rename herself? Who does she love so much?
Diana.
Diana Ross. John Delia is now Diane Delia.
Oh, Diane, not
She goes
Diana.
With Diane, but she based it off of Diana Ross.
Dirty Diana.
Dirty Diana. So Delia's friends say she is gorgeous and the transformation is more than a success. And we'll put pictures online. Beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And shining with this confidence that she never had as John, right? So what is really cool about all this, I think, and also a testament to how pretty she was, her beauty, Delia is hired as a model for a brand that we all know that could not be more American, Avon. Ding dong, Avon's calling. And they, no one ever knew that this this beautiful woman was in the ad that she was in, was in fact transgender.
No, I saw pictures and it, the quintessential early
Avon,
80s,
right? The big hair.
Hair.
Ooh-wee. Life could not be going any better for Diane Delia when, in August 1981, Diane Delia and Bobby tied the knot in front of family and friends with none other than their best friend, Robin Arnold, right there beside him. Now, this is a little odd, I think. Arnold even helped buy the engagement ring that would adorn Diane's finger. She gave Bobby $1,400 to purchase it. So she bought the ring that's on the guy that she used to love's hand. Who's a woman, but it's like you're...
No, I know.
It's a little symbolically weird that you're marrying... Like, you're in that marriage kind of, too. You know what I mean? Like, you helped buy that ring. You're there all the time. Just a little... It's just not going to turn out well. You know what I'm saying.
No, exactly.
2 months pass, and the honeymoon phase of Diane and Bobby's marriage is starting to turn. Get a spoil. Of course it is, right? The two begin fighting nonstop, and the thought that John Delia had, which was becoming Diane, would fix the relationship, did not turn out so good. That was not to be. That was not happening. Bobby Ferrara admitted to Diane that she was not really attractive to him anymore, and he was having a hard time, shall we say. Well, I just did. Get it. He was having a hard time. He couldn't perform.
Because he really wasn't interested in women.
Bobby admits that he is starting to check out other men now.
Yes.
There. The two of them start flirting with really handsome guys, trying to get the other one jealous, right? They start, you know how it is. Their relationship was obviously becoming really toxic and volatile.
Horrible.
So maybe it was her plan all along, but guess who's still there on the sidelines waiting?
Robin
Arnold. So she's still there.
Outlast.
She is still best friends, BFFs, with Diane Delia. They start hanging out even more together now.
Of course they do.
And now, you know, John is now Diane, so it's two girlfriends doing what they do, being, you know, going to bars and looking for cute boys, right? Problem that they're having now between the two of them is that Diane and Robin are both liking men. They start to go after the same kind of guy. They're competing. They start competing like two girls would. The story is this something or what? Here we go. It's going to get, woo. In September 1981.
If they're your true friends, they stay away from the men that you like.
Yeah, but In September 1981, as Diane and Bobby's marriage is coming to an end, Diane meets some new friends at a club. Robert Vasquez is an auto parts salesman, and Laura is a makeup artist. Robert and Laura start to become part of the group that regularly hung out at Zippers, with a Z, nightclub. Diane decides it's time to move out from underneath Bobby. Literally. No. Move on from Bobby,
you
I guess
don't know
should we
which
say.
One's which.
And she moves back in with Robin. So their new friends agree to help move Diane back into Robin's place. Because here we go. Are you ready? Put your seatbelt on, Jen.
After
finishing the move, the group sits down to eat. But really, they start drinking because we know how that goes, right? And they end up drinking a lot. The two besties, Robin and Diane, start to turn their attention to Robert.
Ugh.
Okay. Robert Vasquez, pretty good looking fella. You know, we know this pattern of the two girls who like a boy and which one are you going to choose? Da 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 da.
And he's already in another relationship, correct?
Well, he's with Laura.
And Laura's there.
In front of him.
Oh, nice.
This gives me a headache. It's like so much to deal with. Okay. As had been established a little bit earlier, we already know that Robin adores Diane Delia, right? And if Diane sets her sights on a guy, then Robin automatically likes that guy too. So this is little patterns unfolding here as they're all sitting there getting drunk. So Vasquez would later say that at one point in the evening, he had Diane's hand on one leg and Robin's hand on the other leg at the table, right? So Robin begins to try to seduce Vasquez while in another room, and she undresses in front of him and tells him that her vajayjay is real and Diane's is fake.
Oh, that's mean.
Right? I put, oh, no, you didn't. Look, I wrote that. Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, that's horrible.
So Robin is trying to seduce Vasquez, and Diane makes a play for Laura. You guys keep up with me here.
I am.
So the next morning, Robin walks in to find Diane and Laura in bed together.
Okay.
Robin freaks out and becomes extremely upset. So she's very...
Does Robin still have feelings?
Mm-hmm. I think what was going on here is that Robin was like, okay, if you're going to be a girl and you're going to like guys, that's one thing. But if you're going to be who you are and you're going to like women, it should be me. I mean, I think that's what's going on there. You know what I mean? Because she was in love with him earlier.
I think Robin's a little crazy.
So it's only been 3 days since Diane had moved back in with Robin. Obviously, things weren't going so well, right? Diane goes over to a good friend's house, and his name is Gary Santasario. I like that name, Santasario.
That sounds like a good ring.
And she asks him if she can stay with him for the night because, you know, they're just not getting along. And he says, of course. So Diane then tells Gary that she needs to go out for the evening. Gary asks why, and she says she'll tell him all about it when she gets back. And by the way, can I stay with you for a few weeks? It's going to be more than one night. It's October 7th, 1981. Mm-hmm. Diane leaves the apartment around 7:30. Now that's Gary's apartment. She's dressed in purple pants, a tank top. This is important later. That's why I say this. And lavender suede heels. You know, you're looking fine, girl. Mm. So this would be the last time that Gary would actually see Diane Delia alive.
I wonder if she wears Charlie.
3 weeks pass since Diane had left her friend Gary's place and no one had seen or heard from her. 3 weeks.
3 weeks and nobody...
Nobody's... And they kind of talk about that. So October 28th, a call comes into the 10th precinct requesting detectives respond to 28th Street at the Hudson River location. There was a body floating in the Hudson. As Detective David Longo responds to the scene, the body had just been removed from the river. The body was wrapped in a yellow blanket, which had been placed over her head. The blanket was secured with a rope tied around the neck. The pinkish stain on the blanket let officers know that there were head wounds underneath there. The woman's clothing let officers know she was dressed up for an evening out, but missing were her shoes, jewelry, purse, or an ID. Further investigation finds grass clippings inside the blanket, as well as leaves and twigs, prompting authorities to believe the killing happened elsewhere and she was transported to that location. Police send the body and the gathered evidence to the medical examiner's office. They're looking for a cause of death as well as trying to find out who the woman is, identifying her. It came back from the medical examiner's office that the cause of death was 4 gunshot wounds to the back of the head. The autopsy also revealed something that would help in identifying who this person is, a small bunny tattoo on her left shoulder. Another discovery during the autopsy became obvious, which you just said it. The person had no ovaries or uterus and had, and I can't make this up, quote, an oddly shaped vagina, end quote. This woman was once a man.
Right. Well, all vaginas are oddly shaped. Well, so
plus that, I thought that was kind of funny. Like, I mean, how, what, who, never mind. You know what I mean. Okay.
Well, but maybe they could tell that it was made out of bread.
Police began their investigation
where
her body was found. The area was known for drag shows and prostitutes, and it was kind of a bit of a rough area. The thought was if a trans person washed up on the shore, they were probably killed. I mean, the belief was that they were probably killed following a robbery or a violent crime or a hate crime, which back then, I mean, I guess hate crime was a thing. Not that it wasn't a thing. It was totally a thing, but like the name of it.
Right.
Did it have that name?
There wasn't a hate crime.
Now, this is 1981, and remember, the AIDS scare is just starting to come out, and there was a huge backlash against gay people, and they had no idea how the virus worked. You remember, like, I remember watching all that. They didn't want to touch people. They didn't want to touch the sick, and that's insane, right?
Horrible. Those poor people.
Police knew from the beginning that to start, they needed to help identify the body. They needed to figure out who it was before they could move into motive murder and, find the perpetrator. Authorities reach out to the community around there, and they're looking for help. They blanket the area on the west side, which consisted of a large number of drag show bars. Mm-hmm. And they were hoped to gain some information about this young trans woman. A small newspaper operating in the area agreed to publish an article about the crime, asking for help from the residents. About a week into Diane's disappearance, Gary receives a phone call from Robin and Bobby saying that they were looking for Diane and they can't find her. Gary says that in the past, Diane would often disappear for a bit to cool off. She'd pull a Camille, let's be honest, right? She'd do that. So Robin reports Diane missing on October 17th to the Yonkers Police Department. But it's a missing persons report, so it doesn't make it to the 10th precinct where the body of an unidentified woman had been found. Okay, now this was before computers and technology, right. So this was, you know, streets away, yet worlds away.
Right.
Weeks pass before anything new develops. So it's now late November. They haven't identified her body yet. That local drag queen newspaper flyer article that Detective Longo asked to be placed makes its way to Yonkers. Friends of Diane are immediately in shock as they read it and they see the mention of the bunny tattoo. Detective Longo meets with one of Diane's friends who agreed to come to the morgue and identify the body, and her name is Robin Arnold. Horrified, she tells police that it is indeed Diane Delia. Delia's friends are left in shock as they wanted to know who would ever want to hurt or kill Diane.
Everybody loved Diane.
Police, as they always do, start with the people closest to Diane. Mm-hmm. Up first is her estranged husband, Bobby. And Bobby is very upset, and he tells authorities that he last saw Diane on October 7th. Bobby actually breaks down the timeline to police, stating that the two of them had had a big argument and there was lots of jealousy going on between them. Police ask him why Diane Delia's body would be without shoes or jewelry when she was found, because that's not how she left. Bobby said he didn't know. So police then tell him that the wedding ring was missing off Diane's finger, and they wanted to know if Bobby had any idea where it might be. And Bobby says no, but he interestingly adds, "You find that ring, you're going to find who murdered my wife." Chilling statement that will come to play later. The statement bothered the detective so much so that he set about trying to find that ring just as hard as trying to find the killer. So he begins to call the area pawn shops. Robin Arnold is next up to talk to the police. Now, Robin Arnold's very open with her interview, and she tells police about the three of them and their, quote, friendships, end quote. I don't even know. Friendship. I don't know if you put that in there. Yeah, whatever. She also says that she paid for Diane's surgery and for her wedding ring. The police seem to believe that Robin was genuinely upset and had feelings for Diane Delia and would not harm her. During this time, as often the case when two people are, you know, dealing with something it's very, it's very hard for them. Bobby Ferrara and Robin Arnold grow closer together, and eventually Bobby Ferrara moves into Robin's house.
Are they together together, or are they just friends?
Now, no one really sees this as odd, because the three of them had always been a trio, right? Diane and Robin and Bobby, but now it's just Bobby and Robin. In early December, detectives working the case finally get a break, and it's from one of Diane's best friends, Gary Santasaro, the one that she was staying with, the one that last saw her in her cute little purple outfit. Gary, along with some of Diane's other friends, decide to go to Robin's place. They're going to go hang out with Robin at Robin's condo. The friends had come over, and they started going through some of Diane's stuff in the closet, including her fabulous gowns and clothes and wigs and makeup and all that stuff, right? They're looking at all the stuff and kind of going over the memories and things like that. And I'm sure Diane would probably, I mean, I would just assume that, you know, other drag performers that were friends could use those outfits or whatever. That's just me guessing that. But so looking down, something catches Gary's eye. Dun, dun, dun. He reaches down and he picks it up. It is a pair of lavender suede pumps. Gary knows he can't say what he found, so he decided to smuggle those shoes out of Robin's house without telling any of the friends or Robin.
Right.
Now, he's the one that saw her in those shoes.
Right.
Gary contacts police and meets up with an officer at a nearby place that all the friends would often go and have dinner. Okay, they hang out there a lot, so they're familiar with it.
Like Central Perk?
Yes, exactly. Gary felt comfortable there, but didn't want Robin or any of the friends, right, anybody to know that he was meeting with police officers. Gary went on to tell the officers what he had discovered at Robin's house in the closet. The pair of lavender shoes that Diane was wearing on the evening that she left his house and disappeared. He told the officer there was more. Gary noticed that something was missing from Robin's house. At the foot of her bed, there's always a neatly folded yellow blanket, and it was not there when he was there. Now, while this is compelling, this is all the police have to go on at this time. So, I mean, maybe, maybe not. Detective Longo is still intrigued with the statement that Bobby made about finding her wedding ring and finding the killer. Longo thinks on this for a bit and suddenly remembers something. This is like a puzzle. And it's just like this. You can't make this up, I'm telling you. Next to the diner where they went to go meet Gary to get the information about the shoes, right next door, there is a
pawn shop.
Pawn shop. Now, maybe, just maybe, the killer, I mean, would they really be that dumb? To get rid of the ring right next to where all the, that they hang out. The detectives go into the pawn shop and they speak to the owner. They show him a replica of Diane's ring. The officers ask if it looks familiar. Anybody by chance had stopped in lately and, you know, maybe tried to pawn one off? The owner says, well, yes, and I remember that ring. Police then start showing the owner photos of all Diane's friends and former lovers, family, you know, anybody that can, you know, identify the person that pawned that ring. And with one photo in particular, the owner claimed that that right there is the person who came in and pawned the ring. It was
Robin.
Bobby Farrar.
Really? That's awesome. I mean, well, no, it's not awesome, but it's, yeah.
Oh, there's more twist here. Stay tuned.
Together.
Detective Longo attempts to reach Bobby Farrar, and surprisingly, he's nowhere to be found. Shocker. Detective Longo, he's pretty close to this, and he knows that something's going to get on this, right? Like, he knows, it's not going to be the end of this. I will get you. So an interesting call comes into the police station, and the caller says he has information about the death of Diane Delia. The man comes into the station, and Detective Longo interviews the man. The man, who is friends with Bobby Farrara, is named Dominic Giorgio. Giorgio tells the detective that after Diane's death, he started hanging out with Bobby Farrara and Robin at Robin's apartment. Recently, when Giorgio was hanging out there, they were watching, this is so odd, they were watching an episode of General Hospital.
And it was Laura.
And it was during this time he heard something that scared him. Giorgio said that he heard Robin say she was involved with killing Diane.
What?
He claimed that Robin said, I killed Diane. This is Giorgio, their friend. It was shortly after this that Giorgio cornered his friend, Bobby Farrara, and demanded some answers as to what happened. What happened with this murder? What's going on with you guys? Bobby Farrara caved and told him what happened. Giorgio convinced Bobby Farrara to write all of this down, and it provided a lot of details for the police. In the confession, Bobby Farrara says he talked Diane into going for a drive with him to talk about their relationship.
That's over.
Yeah, don't
fall for that.
They
don't have a relationship anymore. They're divorced. They're gone. It's over.
Bobby Farrara told Diane that after the drive, they would go meet with Robin at a bar to hang out and have some drinks later after their talk. They meet up with Robin at the scene. Bobby Farrara and Robin tell Diane they had found something in the woods and that Diane would like to see it. According to his testimony, Bobby Farrar and Diane Delia were walking side by side with Robin behind the couple. They reach a small park under the Tappan Zee Bridge. And at this point, during the walk, Robin pulls out a gun. Robin then shoots Diane Delia in the head twice. After Robin shoots Diane, Bobby Farrara takes the gun and shoots Diane two more times because he said her body was twitching and he wasn't sure if she was dead. So there's the four shots. Bobby Farrara claims he did this because he didn't want her to suffer. After doing this, Robin and Bobby leave Diane's body bleeding in the woods. Bobby Farrara goes on to say that days later, he returned to the scene, wrapped Diana's body in a yellow blanket, and dumped her body into the Hudson River.
Remorseful.
Days later. Really? You big jerk? Police now felt that they had enough evidence to make an arrest. On January 21st, 1982, officers arrest Robert Ferrara for the murder of his wife, Diane Delia. The following day, Robin Arnold is arrested. Both are being charged with murder in the second degree.
Second degree?
Yes.
Second degree?
Second degree. You want me to say that again? Second degree.
Why second degree?
The case goes to trial in September 1982. The state asserts that while Bobby Ferrara loved Diane Delia, he didn't want to be with her, but he didn't want anybody else to be with her either. Jealous, right? I can't have you.
But nobody else can.
I don't want you, but nobody else can either. Upon realizing that Robin shared the same disdain and anger and jealousy for Diane, meaning, you know, Robin loved her. And if you're going to like guys, it's fine because I'm not a guy, but I'm a girl. And if you're going to like girls, you better be liking me, right? During the trial, the earlier dalliance, shall we say, with Laura, the makeup artist, was brought up, and the prosecution claimed that Robin was extremely upset with this and realized that if Diane, like we just said, was going to be with the woman, it should be with her, not anybody else. And so Robin was very angry that she had supported John Delia and now Diane Delia with surgery, clothes, a place to live, wedding ring.
I can see that.
On and on and on. Friends of Diane say that Robin was upset and wanted what she couldn't have. And when she couldn't have it, she was just going to get rid of it. Right. Robin Arnold's high-priced attorney,
of course,
she comes for money, Michael Rosen, disagreed, stating that Robin was innocent, simply did not do it, and was in the wrong place at the wrong time. She is simply a poor little girl hanging out with the wrong crowd.
Poor little rich girl.
The attorney then brought up an interesting television clip to show jurors. On a General Hospital episode that aired right around that same time that Giorgio was visiting Robin at her place, Giorgio had said that Robin had stated, I killed Diane. In it, the actress in the scene, that's so typical of soap operas, right? Through heavy breathing and tears, shouts, I love Diane Taylor and I killed her. That was a character in the show. The attorney is saying that that's what he heard. Yes, not that he heard Robin state that, but he heard the actress state that for Robin.
Right.
To help Robin get off. The trial ended on October 6, 1982. It took the six men and six women jury another 4 days to reach a verdict. Robert Ferrara sentenced to 25 years to life. Robin Arnold went on to get married, raise a family. Ferrara did his time and was released in 2008. So I think the thing that's most scary about this whole thing, right, is it in the end, it wasn't really a hate crime. It wasn't a robbery gone bad. It was something much scarier. And that was that the two people that supposedly loved Diane the most in the world are actually the ones that ended up killing her, which is far scarier than some stranger.
Jealousy.
Yeah.
Just because they were jealous. That's what a story. A case, not a story. It's a real life.
But that's like a movie.
That's stranger than fiction. No, that's stranger than fiction. Wow.
And it just, I think, too, you just think like, it, that plays off like they're a bunch of like 14, 15, 16 year olds, right? Like the immaturity and the jealousy and the this and the that.
I was pretty immature at 21 and 22, but not like that.
I love you. I don't love you. I want you. I don't want you.
I want a man. I want a woman. I want
this. I want that. Yeah.
If I can't have you, no one else can. Yep. Or I don't want you, but nobody else. The token
rich kid that wants to like fit in and be different and, you know, anger mom and dad. And yeah.
Wow. Poor Diane. That's awful.
Mm-hmm. Pretty. She's so pretty.
But all she wanted was love.
That's what we all want, right?
Love and friendship. And the people that did it betrayed her.
Bobby claimed that she was involved and she claimed she had nothing to do with it. And then why would he, because they were friends. So why would he claim she was involved if she really wasn't? He didn't really have an axe to grind with her. You know, they were friends.
Whatever. And he was the one that did the pawn shop? Who did they?
He did. He took the ring in.
Took the pawn
shop. I thought for sure it'd be Robin, too.
I did, too.
Yeah, I did, too. That just made more sense. Robin had to know somewhat. The blanket's gone, and the shoes are in there.
Well.
Why? Even if you miss the shoes, realizing that, where's my blanket?
Shoes...
Where's my blanket? So she, even if she had nothing to do with it, she knew something that went on there.
But why would a man take the shoes and put them in the closet? Why, and the jewelry? to me, you would think that they would just leave it there.
Right?
To me, that sounds like...
But a woman would like that, right?
A woman mm-hmm. would want... Well, we can't leave the suede shoes out. What if it rains?
Mm-hmm.
We can't leave her jewelry. That's good jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
Men wouldn't care.
I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She just got off, and I think there was more to it.
Or maybe Robin liked the heels, because purple lavender suede heels sound fantastic. That's mm-hmm. She's involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is a conspirator, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. All right, Jen. Well, I hope
wow,
you...
Wow, that's something.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
That's something. Yeah.
And then, you know, he didn't even get that much time. And, you know, I hate to bring this up again. Jennifer Mee gets life, and she didn't pull a trigger, and she wasn't even on scene. And then he definitely was involved. I mean, he did admit that he did it, like part of it, right? Half
right.
of it. And he doesn't even get, like, he gets free after a while. That's
25 years. Well, it's second degree murder. If they would have brought first degree murder on, they could have done the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the degrees of murder, there's only so much.
Mm-hmm.
time you can get.
Yeah.
That's why I was surprised for they only went to second degree murder.
Yeah.
But it was probably an easier conviction.
To nail it. Tell the good people where they can find us.
You can listen to our show on YouTube. You can find us on Twitter at @OurTrueCrimePod. Download our episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Media, or Google Play Music, Google Play something.
Something on Google.
Just Google Play. Whatever. I don't do
just
Android.
Google something.
Google us. You can find us on Google. We have a blog that nobody visits us at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. We are working on trying to figure out how to get a store attached, because we're going to be starting to sell shirts.
Swag.
A Facebook. We have a Facebook page. I still have to make that private, but we'd like more activity there.
All right, Jen. So remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya. All right, what do you have for us today?
Okay, Jen, I got a...
Sorry, I have to move my mic.
It's okay. I have a case, is what I have.
And you do?
I do.
A case of herpes?
Nope, the antibiotic took care of that.
Really?
No. Yeah.
Valtrex.
Yeah, you can't get rid of that.
That's like what Eddie Murphy say, it's like luggage. You have it for life.
No, it's the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
Never
but
mind.
I'm just saying...
I know, I'm just saying.
No judgment zone here. We love everybody for...
We do.
It's your life. You do what you... You do you.
Boo boo.
Boo boo.
Which, on a side note, I'm a little hyped.
That's just
today.
What I heard. That's by the way, that's just a rumor.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Watch the documentary.
Do you know how rumors get started?
They're started by the jealous people.
They get mad for something they had and somebody else is holding.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So Andy Warhol, Bianca Jagger.
Keep that down.
Sorry,
a bit.
I know. I got excited.
Andy Warhol.
I'm hyper today. I got a lot to do, so I'm just trying. You're doing good.
It's my 70s. This is my era for songs.
I know. That's why I said this. We were going to have fun with this one, even though it's terrible and tragic. But it's
it
fun.
It is terrible and tragic. They all are.
Ready? I'm trying to not sound like I'm reading my reading, but that intro, I had to do it because I made it cheesy. I did
it
on purpose.
Oh, it was good. I liked it. Do you remember going to the bathroom and those drag queens kept looking at us? What are you girls doing in there? The big eyelashes through the lock wasn't... had the hole instead of the whole lock. And the big drag queen with the eye pumped through. What? Because they thought we were doing coke in the bathroom, but we were just sharing the stall to hurry up. Remember that?
What
are you ladies doing in there? And like that big mascara.
I remember the gay
men
were like, oh my God, lipstick lesbians, I love you guys.
I could use a big girl right now. The drink.
Oh,
big
yeah,
girl.
No kidding. Oh, I forgot about the big girls.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sidetracked. Okay,
yeah,
we gotta go. We gotta go.
Oh, good thing we both took our ADD medicine.
Right? Okay.
Did all that.
I'm gonna start that whole paragraph over.
Yeah,
okay?
Do. And slow we're down.
Go.
And
down.
And then, yeah.
Okay, right? What's that love song? The Supremes one? Baby, baby,
where did our love go?
I can't sing this in my life.
Ferrara.
Ferrara, with an A at the end.
Is that like
not Ferrari.
No, but isn't there an actor?
Christina Ferrara.
But he just died related to George Clooney.
Oh, George Romero? No.
George
Ferrara? I don't know. Okay, we gotta go, Jen. You gotta keep
okay,
me
sorry.
Focused here. It's okay.
It was Miguel Ferrar.
Miguel Ferrar, yeah. Now, while his friends were still grappling, Now, while his friends were still dealing with Delia, I know, right?
Did they envelop him?
They
or
did.
Enveloped him.
Well, there's a caveat to it.
It's the epitome of
it. Really is
love.
Yeah, it is. Fucking funny. I'm sorry.
I love it because you know what? We do the exact same
I know,
thing.
You
but
can't
we
help it.
Kind of catch it.
Usually,
we try to,
or we cut it out and pretend like it never happened.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So she's a gold digger and...
I ain't saying she a gold digger.
So not only was she a gold digger, but she was also a...
she just liked that attention.
Coat. What's that called? A coat?
A beard?
No, not a beard.
A coat of many colors?
No. Many colors. Going on their coattails.
Made for me. Yeah. Ferrara arrived. I know, I can't. Ferrara arrived on the scene. And then yes, I realized. On the scene, and Delia soon realized that the love they shared was burning stronger than ever.
Did they have the clap?
So Ferrara arrived on the scene, and Delia soon realized.
Ferrara arrived.
Stop it.
I'm sorry.
So
funny.
Bobby Ferrara. I'm going to say that now. Bobby mm-hmm. Ferrara.
That's why I always go with first names.
Bobby Ferrara informed. It's used the Ferrara. It's Ferrara. Oh, this is a doozy.
That's just why I just say Bobby.
I'm going to have to go with Bobby because yeah. I just can't get the Ferrara.
Wasn't there something about the best place to go was Switzerland or something? Wasn't, or am I remember that wrong? Or was that a joke in the 80s? About having to go over to Switzerland.
Glad you bring that up, Jen. Oh, back sorry. In 1951, mm-hmm. sometimes it's like you read my mind, I swear to God.
Well, I'm smart.
And she was discharged.
Sorry. And of all places to go, if you hate your body, yeah. if you're a male, you have to go to Fort Dix. I think Robin needs the Winona song. I can't make you love me.
That's Bonnie Raitt.
If you don't.
It's Bonnie Raitt.
Her too.
Okay. And like, that song always reminds me of Rodney. Bless his heart. It's a shout out for you, Rodney. Charlie, who's that? Da-da-da-da. Charlie.
I can bring home the bacon.
Banana, fried up in a pan. And never, ever, ever forget.
You're my man. No, that's Anjali, right?
Anjali. Yeah.
Because I'm a woman.
Anjali. God, that had to stink. Okay.
Grandma Ooh. Bought me a bottle of Charlie when I was sick one time, and I used it all in one day.
Of course you did.
Dad was trying to get me in the bathtub because he goes, my eyes were watering. You were so bad, and you were screaming, not my Charlie. Oh, my Charlie will be gone. Not my Charlie.
Thank God Charlie will be gone. Down the drain.
Babe. I loved the
babe,
one babe.
I'm leaving. I must be on my way.
But the
I'll
babe.
Be seeing you.
Can imagine that the medical examiner was told a woman was being brought in and then noticed that there was changes.
Changes. Turn and face the strain. Changes.
I miss David Bowie.
The detectives go into the pawn shop and they speak to the owner. They show him a...